Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hello, all of you beautiful people. Jules here for WhatCulture.com. And finally, we've got the latest title. We spent our hard-earned money. We've got it home. We've taken it out of the wrapping and we've popped it straight into the console of choice. And, oh, God, it sucks. No, I just spent my hard-earned money on this. This, unfortunately, is a very typical scenario, my friends. So let's take a look at some terrible games together today. As I'm Jules, this is WhatCulture.com. And these are eight terrible video games we all ended up owning. Number eight, Enter the Matrix. Back in May 2003, people couldn't get enough of The Matrix. The third film hadn't yet come out and tainted everyone's perception of the IP, and so a Matrix video game was basically a critic-proof slam dunk. Enter the Matrix, though, was not a good game by any stretch of the imagination, as even beyond its bug-riddled, stilted gameplay, you were forced to play as one of the two underwhelming Matrix side characters, Niobe or Ghost, rather than Neo, Morpheus or Trinity. You know, the big three. Yet, The Matrix was such a hot commodity that the game nevertheless went on to sell absolute gangbusters, ultimately shifting 5 million units worldwide. If you were a teenager playing video games in 2003, you definitely owned this thing. And the tragic irony of all of this is that the effortlessly superior 2005 follow-up The Matrix Path of Neo was an infinitely better game, albeit still flawed, but apparently sold poorly enough that its commercial performance was never ever publicly reported. Oof. Number 7. Tomb Raider, The Angel of Darkness. Tomb Raider is one of the most bankable action-adventure game video IPs in history, and for many PlayStation owners throughout the late 90s and early 2000s, it was simply a given that they'd always be able to pick up the next adventure in Lara Croft's ongoing story. But with Tomb Raider, The Angel of Darkness being the series' first mainline entry in 3 years, and also Lara's first foray onto PS2 hardware, expectations were through the roof for a groundbreaking next-gen upgrade. Yet The Angel of Darkness is a deeply, deeply terrible game, clearly rushed to market in 2003 long before it was ready, and remembered less for its impressive visuals and more for its array of bugs and poor controls, combat and, well, camera and everything. It's a thin, incomplete sketch of a promising game that clearly needed far more time in the oven to achieve its potential. Yet, largely thanks to a gargantuan marketing campaign and the sheer success of the PS2 itself, The Angel of Darkness still sold pretty well out of the gate. Ultimately, it went on to outsell its predecessor, Tomb Raider Chronicles, shifting 2.5 million copies and entering the PS2 Platinum range for high-selling titles. Note here that the Platinum range does not always indicate quality. Number 6. Kinect Adventures. On paper, the fact that Kinect Adventures sold 24 million copies and was the best-selling video game on the Xbox 360 seems practically inconceivable, considering how few Xbox 360 owners are likely to actually remember it. Released in 2010, Kinect Adventures was a game that came bundled with the first iteration of the Kinect motion sensing peripheral, which sold 24 million units throughout its lifetime, in turn ensuring that the game itself posted the very same numbers. But like so many impact games like this, Kinect Adventures is really more of a glorified tech demo to show off the Kinect's capabilities, or lack thereof as it might appear, than an actual substantial experience in its own right. The five included mini-games quickly became tedious, making it painfully clear why the game was relegated to this pack-in status, because nobody would actually pay a full retail price tag to play the bloody thing. Still, the numbers don't lie. Millions of people likely have copies of this game collecting dust in their attics to this very day. Number 5. Duke Nukem Forever. Duke Nukem Forever, or Duke Nukem Taking Forever as many came to call it, is perhaps the most infamous and prolific case of a game being stuck in development hell in the industry's history. Announced in 1997 and finally released in 2011, the long-awaited FPS sequel unsurprisingly failed to deliver a game worthy of such an epic wait. With hilariously outdated graphics, boring gameplay, tons of bugs, and a tonal throughline which failed to move Duke into the 21st century. Through and through, Duke Nukem Forever was a product of its labored development development, and per its agonizing simplicity could have easily passed muster as an early to mid-2000s first-person shooter. And though the game originally stumbled out of the gate commercially, it eventually proved to be a commercial success according to publisher Take-Two Interactive. The reason for this can actually be chalked up to just one thing: morbid curiosity. Duke Nukem Forever has been so widely discussed in the game's media for 15 years or so that its near mythic stature made buying it feel like owning a piece of gaming history. No matter how poor the end result was, for many they simply had to have this game after waiting so damn long for it to come out. Number 4, Red Steel. Now, on paper, Red Steel should have been a promising and exciting game for the Nintendo Wii launch lineup, a high-octane FPS in which players could use the Wii's motion controls to fire a gun and swing a katana at the same time. Now, Red Steel wasn't the worst game released during the Wii's launch window, but it certainly was the most disappointing, largely due to the frustratingly unresponsive motion controls, generic level design, atrocious AI, and a litany of performance issues. Despite wildly mixed reviews, Red Steel still sold well for the Wii, shifting over 1 million units during its lifetime, largely off the back of those craving a John Woo-inspired action extravaganza on their shiny new console. But as is so often the case, the 2010 sequel ended up faring far more favorably with critics. Yet, because Ubisoft Paris had burned bridges with players the first time around, Red Steel 2 didn't sell nearly as well as its predecessor, and it killed the franchise dead. Brilliant. Number 3, Star Wars Battlefront 2. So as it stands right now, Battlefront 2 is actually a pretty damn good game. They've done a lot of work to bring this up from the muck that it was covered in upon its release. But still, that release window was absolutely groan-worthy. So in 2015, the original Star Wars Battlefront reboot was widely criticized for offering up a bare-bones package of maps and modes, not to mention a lack of a single-player campaign. And so EA promised that the 2017 sequel would be far more content-rich. But of course, its actual launch was a PR disaster for EA, largely due to the intrusive microtransaction encouraging loot box mechanics uncovered by critics during the review period. And though EA actually removed these mechanics, the damage was already done, and was further worsened by the fact that EA had just this utter contempt for their own customers, viewing them as little more than an ATM machine with a pulse. But despite all of the huge online vitriol pointed towards EA and Battlefront 2, it still sold a staggering 9 million units within the first 6 weeks of release. That is insane. Above all else, this demonstrates the massive commercial pulling power of the Star Wars IP, and that as much as people moaned about EA's disdainful treatment of their player base, many of the said complainers still threw down their cash and bought the game regardless. And that's the worst part here. That is where we become part of the problem, because we're basically rewarding them for terrible, terrible business implementations like this. Shame on us. Number 2, Aliens Colonial Marines. Prior to its actual release in February 2013, Aliens Colonial Marines was one of the year's most anticipated games, with marketing suggesting that it would be one of the few worthy games titles to make use of the Alien movie franchise, delivering up a worthy sequel to James Cameron's Aliens, with actors from the film even lending their voices to the project. Yet, Colonial Marines was ultimately released to scathing critical reviews, ripped apart for its generic missions, underwhelming graphics, bug-filled gameplay, and worst of all, its janky xenomorph AI, often rendering the supposedly tense sequences unintentionally hilarious. And as we all know now, a lot of Colonial Marines' development had been outsourced to third parties, and a class action lawsuit was later filed declaring that players had been misled by earlier gameplay demos, which suggested a far higher quality product. But despite all of this, Colonial Marines was a shockingly good seller, offloading more than 1.3 million copies in its first 6 weeks on the market. Terrible reviews and negative publicity be damned, apparently. Seemingly, for many Aliens fans starved of quality video game content, even a dumpster fire like this was better than nothing at all. Thankfully, Alien Isolation was only around the corner. And what a game that was. And number 1, Carnival Games. Though Carnival Games wasn't a pack-in for the Nintendo Wii as you might expect, it was nevertheless marketed to appeal to the broadest subset of players possible, namely your younger siblings, your parents, and even your grandparents. The game delivers exactly what it says on the tin, an array of carnival-themed mini-games which are decidedly less diverse and enjoyable than venturing out to an actual carnival. Again, the limitations of the Wii's motion controls at the time, or rather the developer's inability to take advantage of them, rears its head once more. And that's not to ignore the risable graphics graphics and repetitive gameplay loop. But despite all of this, Carnival Games sold 7 million copies across the Wii and DS, making it the third best-selling third-party game on the entire Wii console. Truly, it's a testament to the fact that even lowest common denominator quasi-shovelware could actually sell well on the Wii. Thanks to its massive install base and how brilliantly the control appealed to those who would never call themselves gamers. But you know what, that doesn't excuse the fact that it's still a terrible game, and unfortunately one that many of us likely owned. Cheers, Nan.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.